Hi, thank you so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. Let's continue our conversation about the future of democracy in Hong Kong. We have Victoria Hoi, political scientist at the University of Notre Dame in Indiana, joining us tonight. I'd like to ask Victoria about the future of Hong Kong, because Hong Kong is so well positioned as a financial center in the Asia region, as a global business hub and an economic powerhouse, and making reference to what you mentioned a bit earlier, that you know there's been an exodus, there's been people deciding whether to leave or whether to stay, and I'm just wondering how that impacts the business sentiment and Hong Kong's position as a financial hub within Asia. Have things changed on that front?
Well, yes. Yeah, so Beijing's ideal for Hong Kong is that they can stifle Hong Kong's freedom, but yet maintain Hong Kong's capitalism. In a sense, Hong Kong's international financial status on par with London and New York City. The problem is that the national security law, Beijing wants to rein in full control of Hong Kong, that makes it very difficult. There are a lot of businesses, they are thinking, well, you know, we operate also in Shanghai and Shenzhen and in Beijing, in other coastal cities in China. Hong Kong is becoming as bad as in the rest of China, so, you know, it's the same thing. But the AmCham, American Chamber of Commerce, they did a survey. They found that about 42% of the respondents were planning to leave Hong Kong. And I think this is actually going to become an important factor, because it is about if you are a service provider for data, for your Facebook and WhatsApp, if you are asked to provide the data of a few people that the Hong Kong police want, you are liable to providing that information. Otherwise, these providers, they themselves are subject to penalty, and also could be the chief executives subject to other charges. And also, the officers, the staff involved, including the family members, could also get into trouble. They could also have their assets freeze. This is pretty scary stuff. So if you want to rein in Hong Kong, you actually need to rein in everyone, including the business sector. And on top of that, you know, what kind of education, you know, these professionals, they have the kids, if they send the kids to school, even international schools, now that they are subject to quote-unquote patriotic education, they have to learn to love the national security law.
Victoria, it seems that, you know, the rest of China, as it were, you know, has operated under these, say, anti-democratic draconian laws, and yet China is a lightning rod for anybody who wants to invest, who wants to set up a manufacturing base. Hong Kong is part of the Greater Bay Area that I believe that China has been, you know, wanting to develop, and that I understand is going quite well. So, is the argument for Hong Kong's uniqueness undermined by the success, the economic success of mainland China, as it were?
There is no question that China has been able to do a lot of this. So the U.S. government, because they passed the Hong Kong Policy Act in response to the Sino-British Joint Declaration and the Basic Law, well, you know, okay, we take the promise that Hong Kong is going to maintain its sovereignty, its own autonomy. And also there was this one country, two systems model, the rule of law and everything. So we're going to trust you, and so we're going to give Hong Kong a special economic status. And beginning from last year, the State Department said that we are going to decertify Hong Kong's autonomy. But people can also ask what has actually happened. There are sanctions imposed on certain top officials in charge of Hong Kong, but nothing. Because Beijing is betting that, well, you know, if these U.S. companies, they're leaving Hong Kong, they're going to suffer a lot. Now, Hong Kong used to be the gateway for China to go out to the world. Now the very presence of a lot of these international companies are now being held hostage. So you work with us or you leave. So either way, all these international companies lose. Now Beijing can still continue to leverage this because, you know, they figure that China is still the place that you can make money, you can make profits. And so the European Union, for example, early this year was still talking about a special trade agreement with China. But what I also want to say is that while people can make money in China, everyone also knows that the system itself has a lot of structural flaws, that you can make money, but at the same time, you know how corrupt the system is. Even international businesses in Hong Kong and ethnic Chinese businesses, the businessmen, they have actually been getting into trouble quite a bit, that, you know, they take your money, they take your investment and turn around and sue you for tax violation or whatnot. And then everything is gone and you're in jail. And this could happen right. to the international investors too.
All right, Victoria, can I ask you how the pandemic has altered the dynamics in Hong Kong? I'm just wondering whether the pandemic in any way aided Beijing, because perhaps it forced protesters to stay off the street, whether or not the perception of the people of Hong Kong has changed after the pandemic, just given how Beijing has performed in terms of handling the pandemic. Did that win them any political capital?
They, again, leveraged the pandemic so remarkably well, because as soon as the pandemic started and was basically transferred to Hong Kong, the police would say that, you know, we're going to impose social distance rules, there are going to be no protests. They said, well, because in Hong Kong, in order to protest, you have to ask for a no objection permit from the police. And the police said, no, this is not about free speech, this is all about public health. And last year, on June 4th and July 1st, that was the first time they denied any permit for a protest. And so last year in Hong Kong, there was no more legal candlelight vigil in Victoria Park on June 4th. Also, no more annual protest on July 1st. It was only this year then that they said, both because of public health and because of, you know, the safety concern, that you have any mass gathering. So, and at the same time, though, because the government is now so untrusted, the Hong Kong government wants to make sure that everyone gets the vaccine, but we have heard from so many people, they don't trust the government. We're not going to take the vaccine.
Victoria, was one country, two systems a pipe dream? I mean, considering Beijing's outlook on the world, you know, it hardly recognizes Taiwan as an independent country, let alone, an autonomous region like Hong Kong, that this was going to fall apart because of the logic of the way Beijing thinks about politics. And also, in relation to that, whether Hong Kong's democratic future is dependent on democracy everywhere in China.
This is a very good question. So I was teaching about Hong Kong in the spring semester. One student, he made a mistake. Instead of saying one country, two systems, throughout the paper, he puts down one party, two systems. I thought that was brilliant. It was because one country, two systems could technically work. It's just like federalism. You know, you grant local autonomy to local groups of populations with very different distinctive language and identity and history and culture. This could work. But federalism cannot work in a dictatorship for the same reason. So what has not worked is one party, two systems. And this one party is a Leninist party that brooks no dissent. And it allows no rule of law. It has no room for professional associations to assert the independence. They have to rein in judges. They have to rein in teachers. They have to rein in lawyers. So this is the problem that we are facing. And so in a way then, maybe, you know, ultimately, now that China has completely turned Hong Kong into like the rest of China, what we're seeing is, with recent cases, is that police officers, just because you have no one to police the security officers. So you have top chief security officers involved in scandalous dinners, very expensive dinners, and then they are not held accountable.
Right. Victoria, you talked about all the activists now, being arrested, if not in jail. Jimmy Lai, one of them from the Apple newspaper. Can I ask you, when you talked about collusion with foreign forces being one of the ways this security law cracks down on dissent, I mean, what is left then in terms of help from international communities? Can international communities pressure Beijing from the outside?
This has again become a tricky issue. Yes, Jimmy Lai, one of the many charges that he has, he's also been accused of, you know, just really not nonsensical charges, like the Apple Daily newspaper in the headquarters was using the venue in some, you know, unspecified ways. But foreign collusion, because he called for, last year he called for the U.S. president to help Hong Kong. And then essentially what happened in 2019 was that Hong Kong people decided that, you know, in this teenager versus superpower struggle, we cannot win. The only thing we have is Hong Kong's international status. And therefore, it is very important to appeal to the rest of the world to help Hong Kong. And Beijing, and it that was very successful. The U.S. Congress passed the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act by the end of 2019. And Beijing's response is, well, then we're going to make all of those efforts illegal. We're going to criminalize those efforts. So this is why one of the many things that people as just completely cleaning and cleansing their social media records is that, you know, do I have anything about appealing for international assistance? But while people from Hong Kong cannot appeal for international help, but so many Hong Kongers who have left Hong Kong, and also international governments, international civil society organizations can continue to do so, you know, doing whatever people inside Hong Kong can no longer do.
Victoria, very quick last question for you. Any silver lining, any hope for changing the situation around?
The one hope is that Hong Kong as a city, has this city with rule of law has been completely killed by Beijing. But Hong Kong as a place where people grew up with the memories, that has stayed in the hearts of every single Hong Kong person. So people inside Hong Kong, if they don't want to leave, they continue to hold on to that. They continue to, you know, make sure that they form this community with the kanji joined in the street corner. People outside of Hong Kong also hold on to this hope that one day they can return to Hong Kong and restart it.
Thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was political scientist Victoria Hoi wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching and good night.